Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Platinum Business Insights panel discussion on attracting and retaining great talent. For at least 10 years, I've researched, heard from business owners, and watched as talent has become harder to find in Minnesota. I actually tracked it on a quarterly basis for 6 years and watched it get worse each quarter. Today, it's the most challenging yet, in part because it's now challenging in just about every place around the country. An example that I can think of is try to name the company that was recently in the news for offering free college tuition to new employees after they only are on the job for 4 months. What do you think? Amazon, Weyerhaeuser, Boeing? Nope, Chipotle. Free college for anyone working for at least 15 hours a week for 4 months at Chipotle. Taco Bell is providing paid family time off for store managers. And the website Simply Hired boasts 20 best certified nurse assistant sign-up bonuses. Places like Ebenezer in Chanhassen and Eden Senior Care in Wadena are shelling out $4,000 sign-up bonuses. A trend Amazon helped flame when it made $3,000 sign-up bonuses for warehouse jobs popular a few years back. We all know it's more about wages and salaries though, and a lot of studies have actually shown that you can attract people with these kinds of things, but retaining them is another point all to itself. And that's why today, we're not gonna talk a lot about how do you increase the amount of money you can come up with your accounting department or your CFO to pay bigger salaries, even though that's important and it's becoming more and more important. But we're gonna talk more about the other things that you can do to help attract and retain great talent. This panel discussion is brought to you today by Platinum Group, the state's most trusted business advisory, helping business owners buy, sell, or fix mid-sized Midwest companies. Attendees will be muted during the panel discussion, but asked to participate in a few pop-up polls. At approximately 4:15, we'll unmute and open the discussion up for any questions that the audience might have. To ask a question at that point, please first raise your hand by scrolling to the bottom of the screen to the little more area, clicking on that, and then clicking on raise a hand. And I should see that at that point in time. So with that, let's dive in, start talking about the best ways to attract and retain talent with our three distinguished panelists. Bill English is president and CEO of Accurate Home Care. Bill's also a partner at Platinum Group, where he's helped dozens of companies over the years with matters such as the one we're talking about today. Next is David Maggie. He's principal and co-founder of Alban, Maggie, Underberg & Associates, the area's leading recruiting firm. And David also worked, he led recruiting for Pillsbury and a unit of Honeywell years back. So he understands this issue on both sides of the aisle here. And then Rick Tronfant is with us today. And Rick is SVP of Human Resources at Marvin Windows and Doors up in War Road. This is the same position he held when he was at DigiKey in Thief River Falls. So Rick knows a thing or two about recruiting people to remote cities. I'm going to go down the list one at a time, asking each panelist to tell us why he has agreed to be on this panel and to share one practice or approach that works well today when finding and or keeping great talent. Bill English from Accurate Home Care, please start us off.
Thanks for having me on today. I'm glad we were able to pull this panel together. The company that I'm leading right now, Accurate Home Care, has about 700 employees spread across about half the counties in the state of Minnesota. And so hiring both in metropolitan and rural areas is a continuous challenge for us. And finding top talent in some remote areas is really difficult. But we've partially cracked the nut. Now, the one thing that we focus on is our culture. And we believe that our interviewing process, the respect that we show potential candidates, how we communicate, making sure that the job we're asking them to do is in line with their career goals and offers them a reasonable professional challenge. Those are things that we look for and try to give to our candidates in the recruiting process.
Great. Thank you very much for that. Next, David Maggie. David, how about you? Tell us a little bit about yourself and one thing that you see is working well today.
Thank you so much for having me here. Actually, I think the way I originally got on this panel was through Bill. Bill and I have known each other for a few years, and when you could, we broke bread, and hopefully we'll be doing that again in the very near future. So thank you for having me here. As Dale mentioned, my career is basically matching people and jobs. I started in corporate human resources, working with Agribank, and really staffed offices across North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Worked at Honeywell as the manager of staffing for their corporate offices, and then headed up staffing for the Pillsbury Company. Then I worked with people in career transition for 7 years, actually worked for an outplacement company. Sold that company and opened up a retained search firm almost 25 years ago, Abelin AG Underberg and Associates. My whole career really is matching people and jobs. The one thing I want to mention, and I'm sure we'll get into this is in discussion, is the word proactive. Everything we do is going after people who may not know that they are potentially interested in a position. The other thing I might mention is you've got to keep recruiting your current employees because you've got to keep them there.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much. Next, Rick Tronfett from Marvin. Rick, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, Dale, thanks for having me on the call today. It's great to be part of this panel and this event. I'm the SVP of HR for the Marvin Companies, as you mentioned, and I'm responsible for HR practices, the culture, and communications related subject matter for Marvin. I have found in my time at DigiKey Electronics and leading HR there, company of about 4,300 employees, headquartered in rural part of the state. Same with Marvin, head company of about 6,300 employees in 14 locations, but our traditional HR, our traditional headquarters location, our longtime headquarters locations here in Waro, just 7 miles from the Canadian border, that our aspiration of focusing on how we can support and be recognized for having a significant impact on communities is really something that we hold dear. And when employees come, especially the Gen Zs and the millennials, are looking for a company that's a little bit more than a paycheck. They want to come to a company where they're valued, where their interest in their own community is valued. And certainly we have a lot of rural locations, small town locations. And so being community minded is important. And I would say, just if I could, I know you asked for one, but I'd say a second thing that we really focus on is really getting our own employees involved in recruiting, because the best referral you can get is from your own folks. And we actually make it fun, and we spend a lot of money and a lot of time on communicating and making referrals to the company kind of fun and energizing for employees. And if we're doing a good job on the inside, they'll be our better recruiters than the HR department will be in finding those people. We can do a lot of tactics in HR, but really getting our employees engaged in telling their friends, neighbors, and family about Marvin is really a key.
Great, thank you. It's interesting that all three of you mentioned using the employee as, or the employee experience, whether you're doing the interview, as Bill was saying, when you're looking at a prospect, to re-recruiting, to what you just mentioned, Rick, as a referral. So very interesting to think about that. And going to roll into the Q&As here with that transition. But Rick, you know, you mentioned fun, making referrals fun. How do you make them fun for employees to the point where you can get those results and measure how well you're doing?
Yeah, we actually do quite a bit of analytics on where we're getting the resourcing from, the talent from, and referrals is really, in this difficult time when there's less workers in the labor market now than there was pre-COVID. And there's more folks on unemployment because of a variety of things related to the pandemic and otherwise. So it's really a competitive situation. And we really want to make it fun internally by saying, hey, look, invite folks that you really trust and respect and who you feel like share our values to the company. And not only part of the fun, Dale, is the reward of the bonus they get for somebody who's hired, but also we're introducing this year Plinko games and different things in each plant to make it fun. It's fun to see you go out on Facebook and you see people taking some of our materials and just saying, hey, you know, I work here, come to work for us, and they'll get likes, and then that social networking really makes it fun too for people. So That's a great way for us to find people that have shared values, and it's working well for us so far.
That's great. And this is a question back to you, but then also to the other two panelists as well. Please, panelists, chime in back and forth with each other. Interrupt me or other people if you want to. But you mentioned Gen Z. And, you know, I think all of us have talked about how there are different things that different generations like. There are different things that attract new talent that might be younger. How do you go about making sure that that kind of fun may be there for them, but how do you have then an equal amount of fun for people who are of an older generation to make sure you keep them not only hired, but also engaged?
Yeah, you know, our annual engagement survey, and we're not only doing an annual one now, we're actually doing quarterly surveys of different kinds, like how are they feeling their experiences during COVID and so forth. We were able to get age and other demographic data from that and really start to zero in on the demographic layers we have within the company and what really motivates them. It's hard to, in this day and age, to do a one size fits all. You really need to look at where folks are energized and then be able to put together an array of different opportunities, total rewards, different things that create a fun work environment. One of the things we're really reimagining is attendance and flexibility. So one of the things the Gen Zs really tend to like is freedom and flexibility to go out and do the things they love. And so looking at time paradigms and things that used to be, you know, shift work, especially in our operating plants, and looking at different ways of allowing different opportunities for them on a flexibility and attendance basis is one of our focuses this year.
Okay, great. Thank you. David, how about you? What are you hearing out there, and what are you seeing with some of your folks?
I love what Rick just said in terms of customizing and really making sure you're offering something to every different demographic that's in your workplace. Some of the most creative things that I have seen our clients do, and frankly, search should be a last alternative. There's so many things a company can do before they get to the search firm. But our clients have gotten really creative in finding out what is going to motivate the employees. And while cash is always nice, it isn't cash necessarily. And what I may be looking for might be something fun, a getaway with my wife. Rick might look for something else, Bill something else, Dale, same thing with you. And it's offering people that variety. It's offering people that choice. And sometimes it's a combination of things. My favorite company offered sort of a cash bonus for a referral, but then your name was put in a hat. And quarterly, they draw the name for some greater prize, a vacation package or something that just made it a little more exciting. And it was done sometimes at an employee meeting. So you had everybody seeing what was happening and getting excited when other people won and getting excited that they were part of that as well.
And Bill,
I'll just chime in and say that one of the things I've been looking at, and I got to figure out how to do this in my copious free time, is to put together some online, what I call birds of a feather social groups. So maybe have a group for my employees about gardening or cooking or repairing cars or, you know, various personal interests that have nothing to do with home care, but yet would be meaningful to my employees. That's one of the things that we're kind of looking at. We haven't done it yet, but we're looking at it.
Okay. And Bill, have you done sign-up bonuses at all? And if so, how have they gone?
Have I done sign-up what?
Bonuses?
Yeah. We do a $3,000 referral bonus that's paid out at 6 months in a year, assuming that the person coming on is in good standing and the employee who did the referring is in good standing. We have found a tepid to moderate response with that bonus program. And two reasons. Number one, there's nothing up front. And so we have been looking at changing the bonus to maybe pay out $1,000 after the first 40 hours of the person that was referred, and then maybe cut the bonus from $3,000 to maybe $2,500 and pay out, say, the other $1,500 at 9 months, something like that. In other words, something up front so that it's kind of like, you know, operant conditioning, you know, when the dog, you know, you ding the bell and the dog salivates. So you do something up front. But the other thing is the person coming on board doesn't get anything. And so we've been trying to look at a welcome bonus mm-hmm. to the new employee as well as a referral bonus to the referring employee. And the other thing that we do is we don't cap the number of referral bonuses you can earn. So you refer 10 people, you can earn $30,000 a year just referring people. Because in our way, in at Accurate Home Care, we need, we'll lose 100 nurses a year and we need to hire at least 100 just to, keep up. So hiring nurses, hiring the right care providers is a big deal. So we find that the bonus is better accepted by our employees if the person coming on board also gets something out of it.
Yep. And Bill, back to you also, when it comes to this question, which is also going to the other panelists, how do you address the potential hires question, why do I want to work for your organization versus all the others that want to hire me right now?
It's almost never about compensation. I mean, it is somewhat, if you're below market, you won't get them. But if you're above market, that may not make a difference. What really makes a difference, what we have found, is the culture and the leadership. Do they have trust in the leadership? Do the current employees speak well of the leadership? And is the culture a place where they want to work? Now, in home care, culture, how do you bring culture into a home when the nurse is always going from their home to the patient's home and back to their home? And they're never in the home office. I mean, never in the home office. So how do we extend culture? We do that through any number of ways, but mostly it's through communication and being really honest with them, being forthright and upfront and communicating well. And the people in the field have come to really appreciate that. And so I think that the top talent is looking for good culture. They're looking for the right challenge. Is this going to help me in my career? They are looking for good compensation, but mostly top talent isn't money hungry. They're really not about the money as much as they are about the challenge and the work and contributing something back to the company and to the greater good. So those are things we look at.
Great. I'm going to come back to you on something you just said in a bit, but next I want to hear from Rick and David. What are your thoughts on that question that I just asked? Let's go with you, Rick, first in terms of, why would an employee want to work for Marvin?
Well, I think what we're trying to do is a couple things. First of all, in the candidate process, I was going to mention that we try to flip the script so that candidates aren't just like we're not folding our arms and saying, man, you're just lucky you applied to work for us. And if you get hired, you're lucky. I mean, candidates are gold and flipping the script so that they're almost interviewing us to see if it's a fit and then making sure that values alignment is there. But then backing it up with a real purpose and values driven business. We have our purpose and our value statements constantly in front of us. We talk about purpose and values a lot. Our purpose is to imagine happier and healthier ways of living. And one of the things we're trying to do is that employees, happier and healthier ways of living, not only the beautiful window products that our customers can enjoy the outcome of our purpose, but employees can, because we're trying to say, look, it's not only for the customers, but the employee should see a very inside out experience where there's authenticity about the work they're doing, contributing to a product that creates that in customers, but also for themselves having healthier and happier living as a result of working here. So we're trying to kind of get away from the traditional manufacturing things and really start to look at how we can create a culture where employees see our products, building that into the customer experience, but also, more light, more views, more flexibility, more of a focus on the health and well-being of the employee. I think that's a really great thing that can kind of create that brand we want long-term.
And David, before I come back to you on this one, Rick, do I get a employee discount on windows if I work at Marvin?
You do. It's an incredible discount, 75% off retail. So it's,
really?
It's those are very well sought after discounts.
Do you have any summer jobs? I have a home remodel project right now.
We do. And we'll give you all the restrictions on the employee discount when you get here for that summer job.
I'll follow up with you on that one then. Thank you.
It's a great deal.
David, what are your thoughts on this question?
A few years ago, I was asked by a division of Cargill to come and address a question that they had. And believe it or not, the question they posed to me was they were experiencing for the first time in their history, this division, something they called regrettable turnover. And they were losing people that they never thought they would lose to other employers. And I did a little bit of research and found that there were some interesting best practices, many of which Rick mentioned, Bill mentioned, but one of which is really getting everybody involved in talent management. It's not HR, it's not just the hiring manager, but it's the senior team that really needs to take an ownership stake in the talent and understanding the importance of that. We found that companies rarely talked about their values, but they were well plastered on the wall. They really need to give examples of how a company lives its values and even how those values were chosen. I mentioned this up front. One of the things that we didn't do well at Pillsbury, and I'll own that from the late 80s when I was there, is we were great at recruiting, but we were horrible once you were there. We forgot to recruit our current employees. Once you got there, it was pretty much just get to work and we'll deal with you later. We really got to work on recruiting the next crop. And we did a great job of that, I'm proud to say, but we forgot about the current employees. And the best companies are recruiting their people all the time. And then one of the things, it isn't always money. Actually, it's rarely money. It's development and training opportunities. It's a chance to learn and grow and do some exciting things in the company that maybe I didn't anticipate I would when I showed up.
Yeah, I mean, what you were talking about, that was kind of the norm back then. Get them in the door, get them to work and move on. But tell us a little bit more about what you mean by re-recruiting.
Mm-hmm. Great question. Again, it's showing appreciation for a job well done. It's management walking around and getting to know the employees. It's throwing an ad hoc get together, and yes, we're beginning to do that again as we're getting back to the office and back to vaccinations. It's doing something ad hoc for the employees just to let them know they're appreciated. It's taking an interest as a manager and coworker in understanding what my employees really do for a living outside of work. What do they love doing for a living standpoint? What are their hobbies? What are their interests? What's their family situation? And just taking an interest in that. Sometimes it's something as simple as saying hello in the morning, not just going to your office and putting your nose to the grindstone, but instead saying, hey, Dale, how you doing today? What's new? You were at your kid's ball game last night. How did it go?
Yeah, I remember there was a CEO of Master Lock in Milwaukee who used to every day go through the manufacturing floor and talk with people at that location. And it was known throughout the company. So I know there are all sorts of stories about how important that is. And I think COVID kind of flipped it around and made it harder for people like that who used to be able to walk through the office or walk through the manufacturing facility to see folks. And so along that line, as we look at a future where we may not ever really go back to 5 day a week jobs where everybody has to be in the office. Let's continue that line, David. How do you then continue to re-recruit when your employees aren't around you as much as you used to be able to have them around you to actually go up to them and say, hey, how you doing? And stuff like that. How do you roll forward into the kind of the new norm with that?
Great question. And I don't know if we will ever go back to office jobs being people in the office 5 days a week. 40 hours a week. I'm not sure we will go back to that. But I'm seeing some companies do some creative things. You're seeing companies entice people back with actually what they're calling collaboration days. Let's come in on Wednesdays because it's a great chance for us to get together. We're going to do that in a safe way, but we're going to do something where we actually come in and collaborate. We've proven we can do emails from anywhere. I don't need to be in my office to respond to an email or answer a call. I'll just forward my office phone to my cell or vice versa. So we have collaboration days. There are all sorts of studies, and here we are on Zoom, about how stressful Zoom is, and people spend their lives on Zoom today. And there's a company a couple weeks ago that was talking about having Zoom-free Fridays. And I just thought that was a wonderful thing to do to recognize that employees are stressed out from all these Zoom calls. And we are going to make it on Fridays where you're either going to do your tasks at home, or if you're in the office, we're going to do it where you're not ever on a Zoom meeting. And I have to tell you, the people that I know that live on Zoom, when I've mentioned that to them, are just so wildly excited about having a day where they don't have to wear something that they look good for, you know, from here up, that they can just get their work done and not worry about the screen or the camera.
Bill and Rick, also just to briefly, same question. Bill, when you think about how do you make sure that people feel as valued as what David was just talking about, how are you looking at kind of transitioning now into the new norm with your employees? Are they going to be at your office every day? You know, what are you going to be doing?
We have it's really across the board. We have some employees who really want to be in the office 5 days a week. They crave the interaction. Other employees who really couldn't care less. Most are in the middle. So we're going to start at a certain point, and I don't know when that's going to be, but we're going to start by requiring everybody in our office to be in there 2 days a week, the same days. And then we're going to leave it up to the department managers as to if they want to see if they want their people in the office any more than that. Our people do an awful lot of phone conversation because our 620 some care providers are all remote. They don't come to our office. So there's a lot of Teams and telephone calls and emails as it is. And so the 60 or roughly 60 or so people in the home office, 2 days a week, 3 days at home. I like the idea of calling them collaboration. Dave, I may steal that from you if you don't mind. But that's what we're planning on doing.
Okay. And Rick, how about you? I know a lot of your employees are manufacturing facility employees. So right. How does all this kind of relate to Marvin?
Yeah, you know, that's a unique dynamic we have. We have folks that are on the plant floor, and of course they're accessing the equipment and making products. There isn't a lot of room for remote work there, but what we're trying to do is create a value proposition that would perhaps fall in line with the manufacturer's experience, maybe having an opportunity to have a more flexible schedule and things of that nature. But even in the plant office areas, you know, that differs a little bit from the non-plant office areas in our sales and customer service groups and administrative offices. What we're doing right now, especially in the non-plant areas, is we have a guidebook that we're publishing that basically encourages managers and their employees to have conversations about what those employees would like to see and what flexibility and what remote opportunities looks like to them. And then we're gonna provide some operating norms that they can work within. But we have put a stake in the ground. Our CEO went out on a video a few months ago and said, you know, we're never gonna be the same. We're committed to doing something different and not going back to the way we were. And I think to win the war on talent, you really have to take advantage of the situation and do be different and get out there ahead of other traditional approaches in this. And we're pretty committed to doing that. And we've actually voiced that with our employees already.
Great, thank you. I've run a couple pop-up polls while you've been talking. One asked people, what do you want to hear more about, finding talent, keeping talent, or both? And I'm happy to say that almost 90% said both. So we're on the right track there. The other one asked about, you know, what are the most important things when it comes to bringing in talent to our organization? And the majority there was our company's values, our culture, and our values. And with that said, what do you use, each of you, and David, what have you seen used, to quantify and measure the quality of culture so that you can benchmark and actually use that when you can say, okay, we need to improve our hiring and our retention? What do you use to do those things? And Rick, I'll start with you first.
Well, one of the things that we've implemented in the last year, we used to be kind of a, let's say, a company of companies. We had different divisions that kind of did a little bit their own thing. We're trying to create what we call a one Marvin culture. And because we all ladder up to the same purpose and values now. And We always kind of have had those purpose and values, but we've just been able to articulate those in the last few years. And one of the things that we do to really focus on that is we have a People at Marvin program, and it's basically, it recognizes those folks who do things in their day-to-day environments along the continuum of our five values. And so what happens is they nominate their peers for that. We publish, we'll call it a value spotlight in our monthly newsletter, where we've kind of showcasing those folks. And then at the end of the year, it ladders up to an Inspire at Marvin Award. So at our annual meeting, Marvin's kind of notorious for profit sharing, and our annual meeting celebrates the accomplishments of the past year. Our president and CEO, introduced the Inspire at Marvin Award winners, and then we have cameos on those. So that's an awful lot of fun, but I think it's important to kind of have that in front of people and, have an award system, have some kind of a recognition system for that. And living our values, you can't just say it. It can't be a slogan on the wall. You really have to do it. And so this program gets folks to, recognize people who are kind of caught in the act, so to say, about, living out our values.
David, how about you?
Our best clients actually address their culture and values as part of their screening process. So in addition to the questions about competencies and skills and examples of projects and so on and so forth, each of the interviewers is assigned one of the values that make up the culture of an organization, and not only address it up front, but give examples and stories about it, but also ask questions that will lead a person to make a values-based decision. And so it's an assigned role within our clients, but it's something that they get excited about because they get to give examples of what causes them to be there and to stay.
Great, thanks. And Bill, how about you?
This is still something we're working out, to be honest with you. Accurate Home Care is a turnaround. As you know, Platinum does turnarounds, and Accurate Home Care is definitely a turnaround. It's owned by Platinum. It's kind of a one-off deal for us, I think. When I got to Accurate Home Care 3 years ago, every department was sniping with every other department and nobody really got along. Even though we had the core values plastered on our walls in like 2.5 foot high font. They were literally these stickers, that you would have professionals come in, and the words were all over the walls. The conference rooms were named after our core values of integrity and authenticity. So you went to Integrity as a conference room, right? But the CEO never followed him. And so they were a punchline at the company. So what we did was, in the first 6 months, what I did is I ignored him. We right away renamed the conference rooms based on Minnesota sports teams. So we have Vikings and Wild and Twins and that kind of thing. And then at 6 months, we have twice annual meetings with the employees where we basically shut down the home office and we get offsite and we just run through a series of projects for the home office people. And we had them rebuild. I had the employees decide what the core value was going to be. I did not dictate that process at all. And they came up with three values with three sub-values for each one. It's not how I would have done it, but that's what they wanted, and so that's what we ran with. Since then, what we do is, at our monthly staff meetings, we have one of the leadership team members either go over one of the core values or one of our eight standard operating principles. So a standard operating principle might be the truth is never the problem, or if you don't know, ask. If you don't know how, ask. Those kinds of things. And so we have 11 different points, if you will, that we can cover in over 11 different staff meetings. So basically once a year we cover each one with our people. We don't have a way to measure that yet. And that's something that in next year, the year after, I would like to get to, frankly, Dale, is, I'd like to know what Rick does up at Marvin, because I've looked at the Gallup information, the Gallup employee engagement survey. I don't know if you or Dave, if you've heard companies that use that, or if they use another tool to measure engagement and values and that kind of thing. But personally, I would really be interested to know what you guys think on that.
Yeah, you know, if I could just add to what I said earlier, Bill, that we have a couple other things besides the recognition side. We actually are piloting a new performance review system where we have a question in there that asks, what values are most important to that employee, you know, on their self-appraisal, and then what values we see most often and where they're living their values. And we point those things out to reinforce that. And then also in our engagement survey, I think I mentioned that earlier, that values are measured as to whether people feel strongly about them. Another interesting thing we did was we created a national handbook. We call it the guidebook that has, you know, some room in, it's in digital media format, but it has some local policies because we realize some states don't have the same employment laws and we can't be completely the same everywhere. But we actually call that values in action. So we take our values and we really call that our handbook. So it's values in action. You know, chapter one is talking about this topic, chapter two, that topic. So there's a number of things when we have some kind of a concern with an employee, you'll often hear people say, well, they weren't living our values, you know, that kind of a thing. So we try to make it live through a variety of means.
So Rick, are you still using employee surveys as your main way then to measure how things are going?
Yeah, I think it that's a big thing. We just changed vendors and we're going to more like four times a year on a situational basis. And we would say that, but also we're trying to look at our performance review process as well to see if we can measure how folks are resonating with our values and kind of how we're doing as a company as well and living our own values. I think there's an authenticity that you have to have at a company, your senior leadership. Like, I think I heard it from Bill saying, you know, if your leaders aren't living their values, why would anyone else, you know? So it's really important for our leaders to really constantly be thinking about that and reinforcing it in the way they role model.
I think the performance evaluation component is brilliant. That's great. Yeah. Because there's also the employee survey fatigue situation that can come up. I mean, you know, we always want to hear more what we can out of the employees and then use that for benchmarking. But at some point, they just don't want to keep taking these surveys. David, are there other tools out there? To Bill's question earlier, are there other tools to kind of measure some of this and other things that are important to not only measuring culture, but checking on how you're doing with retention?
I was going to actually talk about the survey piece here. You were just talking about the survey fatigue. One of the other problems with surveys is we ask our employees things and they don't see that we're doing anything. And that actually is a destroyer of all the goodwill that we've been trying for. There is one company, and I'm not here to endorse anybody, but there's one company that I'm aware of that's actually Twin Cities based that actually does a culture survey. And I can pass that name along to you, Dale, and you can use it as you see fit. And the survey tool that they've developed talks about the fact that culture isn't good or bad, culture just is. And to an extent, their cultural survey measures culture on a good to good basis. And so what I might think is a good culture might be very, very different than what Rick might think is a good culture or Bill. And what we need to do though is articulate what that culture is and then attract people that really will work within that culture. And I'll pass that name along to you, Dale, if you'd like.
Yeah, that would be great. And David, if you could talk a little closer to the microphone, I think your mic is fading out on us. So if you could do that, that'd be helpful too. And as we're talking, one of the folks who responded to one of those pop-up polls that we ran said, you know, we didn't ask in our little pop-up poll, what about the best fit for my career development? So, you know, and this is a question I wanted to ask all of you, and that is, how much do you emphasize the ability for somebody to grow within your organization when it comes to talking with them as potential talent? And how do you, to what you just said earlier, David, how do you then continue to actually deliver on that, not just talk about it, but then how do you actually deliver on that? And are you willing to help them so much that they might quit and go somewhere else? So Bill, I'll start with you.
Yeah, great question. We have not cracked that nut yet, be honest with you, but I want to crack that nut. I, What I envision is that each person in our home office, now this does not apply to our 620 care providers, but in our home office, I'd like to have a playbook on each person. What do they value? What are their interests? Where are they going with their career? I find that when I ask that question, some people don't know and don't really care to have a career. They're more about just having a nice job and getting a paycheck, but their life isn't about work or career. But there are some people who are very career-minded, and for those people, I want to make sure that the job is the right job for them. One of the things I look for, there's eight C's that I look for when I'm interviewing, and career is one of them. Looking at where they've been, is this the next logical step for them, this job in their career? And then how long do I think they probably would stay before they need to move on to another place? And we tend to not hire people where they're only going to be here for a year or two. We look for people to be here, 4 to 6, maybe 8 years, and then we know they're going to move on. And so some attrition, back to Rick's comment, some attrition, or maybe it was Dave, it was your comment. There's some attrition and turnover is good and some is not so good. And we like the good turnover and don't like the bad turnover. So.
Yep. How about you, Rick? That same question.
Yeah, you know what? We're really probably, I would say, in our non-operational areas, trying to do is more with career pathing. So we recognize, I think a traditional way companies look at career development is all roads lead to management, right? And if it doesn't lead to management, you're not realizing a career at a company or you're not being successful. And that's really not the case. There's individual contributor roles that can develop and flourish over time. You can come in the HR area as a HR coordinator, become an associate business partner, become a business partner, become a senior business partner. And at each step along the way, and I'm just picking on an HR career path, but each step along the way, there are criteria for those roles. And I find that people don't always want to be managers and leaders. I mean, they're always self-led, but leading other people, but they do want to see some progression and growth. And not only the career pathing and the promotional thing within career pathing, but also just becoming better people and kind of that, I talked earlier about our purpose is to imagine and create healthier ways of living, happier and healthier. And I think some people just want to work for a company where there's some things outside of even work that they can develop and learn and grow in. When people come into our manufacturing facilities, a lot of the times the advice is, it's an entry-level position, but come in, enjoy, learn our culture, take your time, look around, look at our postal system, and then find those spots in the company where your aptitudes, your interests, and your passions are fed. So they might not always be fed by that first window assembler job, but look around, just be aware of your environment and learn from other people what they do in other areas. And then just go to those areas that really you feel are a good match to your aptitudes, interests, and passions.
Sounds like you have to have some good workplace pride too in each of those positions.
Yeah, I mean, we don't like to diminish any position. Every one of them is important. And there's always a watermark for people to reach, even if they're, tossing lumber into an optimizer. There's always something that they can do to grow in that particular job. So we don't necessarily always just, focus on people leaving the job they're in. Because some people, I think it was said earlier, Bill or David said something sometimes you just like to stay where you're at and you like to stay where you're planted. And we want to kind of an ecosystem where any kind of people, any kind of interest is served there.
Mm-hmm. David, briefly, same question to you.
Well, actually, I wanted to go back to one of the things you said in your question. There have been studies about companies that offer developmental training opportunities, et cetera, to their employees. And what the findings are saying is that employees don't leave because of it. They stay because of it. They're actually motivated to stay. They're excited about the prospect of staying. They recognize that they can move within their company. So they don't leave because you train them. The other piece I wanted to mention on that is if I own my talent, so I'm the department manager and I've got 3 employees. If I keep them with me and don't allow them to grow, I'm probably encouraging them to leave. Yeah. If I take the orientation that instead they're owned by the company and the best thing I can do is develop them to another area of expertise or interest, I win by them staying in the company and let me develop someone else.
Yep. Well, great. To the audience, we are going to take some questions from you. If you have any questions, I have plenty more to keep asking. But if you'd like to ask any questions, you can go down to the lower part of the screen where it says more and go to raise a hand if you want to actually go live like this. Or you can just go to chat and you can send in a question through chat if you want to do it a little bit more quietly. But yeah, just let me know. I see one hand, so I'm going to come up to you and see if I can unmute you. And Bob Stewart.
All right.
Bob?
Yeah, thank you, Dale. Yep. So one of the presenters said early on that a lot of their best recruiting was done through referrals and sort of word of mouth and people that current employees already know, which is great, except for I think all companies these days are very concerned about diversity recruiting and making sure that they can hire people of a variety of backgrounds. And if you get too many from referrals from the core that you've already got, then you certainly don't get diversity. And how do you address that issue?
That's a great question. Who wants to go first?
Can I step out on a limb here a little bit? Since we're not allowed to recruit for race, you know, you can't, it's illegal to do that. Having said that, I know Accurate Home Care, we, our employee population from a diversity standpoint is we're probably 15% ahead of minorities based on relative to the general population. So I don't know, Rick, Dave, maybe you guys know something else, but to my knowledge, we're not allowed to target particular minorities or particular demographics that way and recruit just for that, are we?
That could be fraught with challenges. I think the better approach is to just have a self-awareness and be intentional about the recruitment that you are doing. I like what Bob was asking there, because I think self-awareness is the first muscle we're trying to build. We do have a DEIB initiative, and we're using a survey, an assessment tool, to just grow our managers and leaders' self-awareness. And when we go out and look at pools, sometimes we look at the pool and just say it's not diverse enough. We need to continue to look harder at that, and to try to advertise in places where we can gain more diversity, not going back to those traditional sources. So, you know, in this year of George Floyd tragedy and all the social unrest, you know, we've really learned at Marvin that, you know, it's really important for us to up our game, and we're in the process of doing that right now. And so more to come, kind of like I think Bill said, you know, more to come. Everything's a work in process and we need to do better there.
Well, I think we might have to have a revisit panel in 6 months and see where we're at with some of these things. David, same question to you.
Thank you. I'm going to go with a both strategy. You certainly want to have an employee referral program. I think that really does bring about some great people and some excitement in the company and builds all sorts of things. But you also are not relying on that as your only recruiting strategy. I know that with each position that we take on as a firm, we build in a diversity strategy in terms of where we are going to reach out for candidates, what organizations we are going to approach. Well, we will find people that are not Caucasian males, as I am, that are in a particular industry or function. And so we build that in separately and as part of a total strategy. And I think companies are doing that as well. So they're certainly having the referral programs, and I refer people that are friends of mine, so they're likely like me, but they're also doing some other things on a more proactive basis.
Great, thank you. And we have another audience member. It's Eric Gibson. Eric, you had a question.
Yeah, great. Hey, thanks guys for coming on today with all the great ideas. It's an interesting topic, so I appreciate your time. One of the questions, I run a regional commercial sign company, and one of the areas we try to recruit for is installers. And they need to be able to go up in a bucket truck, and they need to be able to put signs on the side of buildings. There's no formal training program. There's not a college I can go to recruit for these individuals. What experience have you guys had recruiting for roles that there's no formal training programs for? It's almost like you train them on site. Any ideas on getting people into those types of roles? I'll mute here and listen. Thanks.
Well, Eric, good to see you, by the way. It's been a while. I remember we used to have an association with the board we were on. But yeah, I guess what we try to do is we have really some key like tech support roles that maybe don't even have, they're very unique and you know, we require a certain level of aptitude, but we basically advertise that, kind of a general description of the kinds of qualities we want in somebody. And this whole idea that we will train you is kind of what we lean into. And I think it's important that once people that are attracted to those roles come and show up, that we actually do come through and carry through and actually invest in them up front so that they get that opportunity to learn the job really well. But you're right, not every technical school has a program for every kind of job in this really diverse economy. And I think more and more companies are realizing that investment they make up front is really important in training those individuals. And especially if you have a lot of those kinds of positions where that training can scale and it's affordable in the sense of you're going to be able to use that training over and over again. Once in a while, you'll get a niche position that's kind of a one-off and then it becomes more on-the-job training. But that's kind of what we do is really focus on high-quality entry training.
David, what have you seen with some of your clients and some of the things that you've had to deal with in the past?
Two things. The first term that came to mind when you were asking the question was, and it's probably not the right term, but it's an apprenticeship type of program where you're advertising for that, where you are going to train under someone who's much more experienced in this area and that you are going to pay someone to be trained for the role. And so that was the first thought that came to mind. The other is I'm wondering demographically, Eric, where your current, best people are coming from, what their backgrounds were. Are they right out of high school? Are they out of some sort of trade school, so on and so forth? And make that your target market. But same sort of thing. We're going to target this particular demographic or particular background, but we're hiring you to train you and really make it a training opportunity.
Bill, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, because we have a whole service line where there is no training for this. It's where we send mental health workers into the home to teach people basic skills of living to keep them independent. There's no certification for this or anything else. So what we have done is we have built company standards that we want for that position, and then we recruit for that. And the hiring manager, we've actually taken this out of the recruiting department's hands and put it fully into the hiring manager's hands to do the recruiting, because they know she knows what kind of person she wants to hire. And so she has sole authority to do that. And she does the phone screen, she does the interviews, she does everything. And she's very experienced in this area, and that's how we're handling that. Company standards, and then somebody who's experienced in that area, they do all the recruiting directly. We don't involve the recruiting department at all.
Okay. We're running out of time here. I want to ask a couple more questions. For Rick and Bill, about how much do you anticipate you're going to have to increase wages and salaries this year on average compared with last year?
Well, it's the marketplace is very much supply demand driven. And what we do with our operational groups is we really look at our local markets where we play. We actually have talked in the last few months about having an aspirational living wage that we basically commit to, not as a, if Chick-fil-A is paying $18 an hour nationwide, not like that, but a certain, index against the local labor market that we're committed to paying as our value proposition in every market we're in. So we're considering that. But most certainly, Dale, as this incredible V-shaped recovery and the demand and the demand that's back just in spades, way more demand than before this pandemic, is going to drive up the cost of people. And we have to be there on the cutting edge and not falling behind in that. And what I would want to say too is companies can make whatever they want their value proposition. Some companies will go strictly on pay as their centerpiece. Some will go with other attributes of their work environment, but you have to be able to market your value proposition in the local markets you're at. And we usually take a very local approach, but are thinking about, you know, an aspirational living wage and indexing it kind of across our enterprise so that folks are seeing that one Marvin similar experience wherever they are.
And that sounds great. And as you budget for this year, what have you come back and thought then, okay, across the board, it's going to be a 3% increase or a 6% increase?
Well, you know, we started with numbers that you're talking about, but we've actually had budget reallocation meetings where we've really reset that standard. So what used to be those traditional levels has really turned non-traditional quickly, just because we're in that supply demand environment. We just have to step up in order to really kind of honor the local labor markets and where the prevailing pay is at.
So 7%?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, the 3%, 3-4% that you cited, you know, is our traditional play.
Yeah.
But we're not necessarily there in all of our labor markets, and so we've had to greatly increase that in order to be able to be competitive.
And I was asking so much because our little mini poll that we just did, 43% of people said they'd be raising their wages or salaries on average 6-9% this year.
Yeah.
And the 57% said still hopefully only 1-5%. So Bill, where do you fall into that?
Yeah, we're in the 5-10% really. That's what we're seeing for our home office in Otsego. Now the care providers are regulated by reimbursement rates from commercial insurance company and state medical assistance programs. So we don't have a lot of room there. And that's why we have a shortage of care providers in home care, is because the home care market cannot pay what the real market would demand. There's a lot of upward pressure on salaries right now. And so for new candidates coming in, when they're replacing somebody, what we're finding is that we're having to increase their salary anywhere from 5-10% just to get a new candidate to look at the position, let alone take it.
David, how about you? Average of averages, what are you kind of seeing out there?
I can tell you that to get someone who is gainfully, busily, and likely happily employed somewhere to move to a new position when we approach them is taking 10-15%.
Boy, it reminds me of the housing market. I have to pay up to, you know, get a house. We're out of time, but I want to do just a power round real quick. 30 seconds each of you. What should we have talked about that we didn't get to today? What else would you like to share with people before we wrap up for the day? David, I'm going to start with you. 30 seconds.
You need to wake up every day owning your talent and figuring out each day what it is that's going to keep my best people there and get them to be advocates for bringing in greater people as well.
Great. Thank you. Rick?
Well, we've been reminded that in this difficult labor market, too often we make it an HR hiring issue. And what we really have to do is, it's everyone's issue. It's everyone's issue in the company, and that includes all the functional business areas that need to retain their talent. So don't let it become something in your company where it's all HR's responsibility. Own it as a company, own it as a senior leadership team, and put your employees first to make sure retention is the first thing. Because when you lose somebody, the cost of replacing is just is terribly high and challenging to overcome.
Great, thank you. And Bill?
I'm gonna take a different approach. Leadership. Leaders need to love their people in a very appropriate way, but we need to show that we care about them as people, not just the job that they're doing. And we need to love on them. There's not a lot of places where people go these days where they get thanked, they're shown appreciation, and they feel valued. And I think we can have a huge impact in our companies and culture by doing just those very impersonal, simple things for them.
Great. Well, it's a good note to end on. So I want to thank you very much, all of you today. Bill English from Accurate Home Care, David Maggi from Albelin, Maggi, Underberg and Associates, and Rick Tronfett from Marvin Windows. If I was in an auditorium, I would clap and ask everyone else to clap. So thank you very much for being with us.
You bet.
I want to also thank everybody else for joining us today. And for those who will be watching this as a recording, please send us at Platinum Group any thoughts you have about today's presentation, or if you need help with anything, just drop us a line. You can drop us a line at info@theplatinumgrp.com or give us a call at 952-829-5700. Thanks again, everyone, and have a great day.